fellow fancy baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode number 5 of the Johnny and Josh Show add-on that is fantasy baseball with my very dear friend, James Holden. Welcome, Jimbo.
Good morning, Jonathan.
I'm looking at the screen, which obviously our listeners don't have the benefit of, and you're clearly no longer in Swanage.
No, I'm back home, back in London town. So all is good.
Fantastic stuff. Well, before we start, very important to say we're recording this on Friday morning. Obviously, a number of games were cancelled, postponed last night and the day before with the latest issues, which just is a constant reminder that there are bigger issues in this world and more important issues than fantasy baseball. And we obviously tip our hat and acknowledge the importance of baseball players like any sporting superstar doing their bit to make change for the better of all of us. So we appreciate there are more important things in life, Jimbo, and I never thought I'd hear myself say this than fantasy baseball, but there are.
There absolutely are, and yeah, very well said, JG, and I echo everything you've said. Yes,
fantastic. Well, let's focus on the most important thing. Am I still in second? Yes, yeah. Baby. Yes, baby, I am.
I knew you'd be bringing this up. We didn't manage to get off air last week without you. I mean, it's almost like, you know, you're so unused to the heady heights.
Mate, I've got vertigo. I mean, the beauty as well, and it's a very interesting conversation you and I had, and I'm sure many fantasy baseball players will associate with this, that it's an awful lot easier to be in second chasing than it is to be in first defending.
100%. I mean, yes, as somebody who's been in both of those positions, it's much more fun. You know, when you've got the leader in your sights, you've worked out what you do to have to overcome them. It's a fantastic feeling. If you have a good night, you're gaining. Whereas when you're up the top, it's a very, very lonely position. Now, the rest of the league hates you and desperately wants you to fail every single night.
So. But you know, buddy, in some respects as well, I mean, we mentioned Nick Schepanek, who leads my league, the Auction League, our league. He had a 27-point lead about a week ago. That lead is down to 11 points.
And okay, that, you're getting far getting too confident. You're getting
this is the point I'm trying to make, is that suddenly it sort of vaguely looks doable, which you know means I'll completely mess it up. It's all going to go horribly wrong.
Next week, when you're sitting there in fifth wondering what happened, absolutely, we'll be reminded of the importance of luck in fantasy baseball as well as skill.
But 100%, yes. 100%. But as you know, I made a trade which I thought had gone horribly wrong, picking up my Braves ace, Max Fried, who I absolutely love. And I gave up Swanson, who again, another Brave, who I absolutely love, who'd gone cold. And then suddenly, as soon as I did the trade, he went completely hot. And the other part of the trade, I think it was Nimmo, he went hot. And I'm sitting there going, oh my God, I've given up these two guys. They've done fantastically well. And the nightmare is that suddenly I heard the other day that Fried's on the mound and it's being covered live on BT Sport. And there I am, reliving the Channel 5 days, mate. I'm watching it live till 3:30. In the morning, I kept saying, go to bed, man. But I couldn't, Jim. I couldn't leave with the man pitching like a legend against the Yankees.
He is. Max Fried has done phenomenally well. And yeah, I think I think we're going to talk about trades, aren't we, later in this. But that was a great example of a win-win trade. I think Tim, you traded him to, really happy. He needed hitting. He's got some hitters. Those guys are being hitting home runs for him. And you've got a fantastic pitcher. I mean, that is what it's all about, making both teams better.
I love that attitude you have, that such inclusive attitude. You want it to be win-win. I don't. I just want it to be about me. Anyway. It's a double-edged sword, though, owning a Brave, owning whoever you, because, well, it actually flips the other way even more, and this is not something we've touched upon, that when you're watching your own team, but it's your fancy players at bat for the oppo, and you're thinking you want him to hit a home run. No, you don't. He's going to hit a home run against your baseball team. But suddenly your love of the Braves flies out the window. That's the worst aspect of fantasy baseball for me.
It's really hard for pitchers. I mean, I love, to be honest, having Braves hitters. You know, so I have Ronald Acuna, as you know, in many places, and have, you know, spent a fortune to roster him. And I love that. You know, Freddie Freeman as well. I've had in previous years, and a number of the other guys. But Braves pitchers is really, really awkward, because you want to see them do well. And if they don't, it feels doubly bad, both for you as a fan and also as a fantasy manager. Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever heard this. It's the Peter Cook School of Betting. I don't know if you've you've ever heard this story, Peter Cook always backed what he didn't want to happen, because his attitude was, if my team loses, I'm gutted. But if I win money as a result of them losing, it sort of softens the blow. It's a very interesting approach to
take. Yeah. No, I like that.
And I suppose you can take the same approach in fantasy baseball.
Absolutely. I remember that in the playoffs as we get knocked out in the first round, as usual. But anyway, this isn't meant to be a Braves podcast, is it?
But we need to do a Braves podcast. That's exactly the spin-off of the spin-off that we need to consider.
listeners too. One in the West Country, one in London. Yeah,
of course, you've also got a job, which I don't right now, so it's a lot easier for me. Right, let's focus on the show, and we're going to talk trade deadlines. Obviously, in real baseball, it's a big issue. But the actual trade deadline for MLB is coming up on Monday. So what do you think about this, Jimbo? How does it impact on your fantasy approach?
We've mentioned it briefly. I think there will be fewer trades than usual. I think it'll be a quieter trade deadline. We've had a couple of small trades already, but I think there'll be a lot of, often you have the big names on the move. We talked, Manny Machado a couple of years ago, there was a huge half of the season, focused on where would he go, etc. But there's only a month of the season left. There's lots of big, bad contracts out there, such as Dustin Upton's, that I don't think anybody wants. And I think most importantly, there can be far less sellers. You've got 16 playoff teams and, there's probably 20 to 25 teams you think they've still got a chance of getting into the playoffs. MLBTradeRumors.com, really good site. They did a top 50 list of the top most likely trade targets. Really not very pretty.
Yeah, you talk about people still being in the hunt. I mean, I was looking at the standings. We've just gone past the halfway mark of a 60-game season. Most teams have played 30-plus. But you are looking at what may be in the American League. You've got Boston out of the running. You've got the Royals. I don't think they're going to have a hope. Seattle, Texas, Los Angeles, the Angels. But in the National League, even the Nationals probably still fancy their chances.
Absolutely, they will. Yeah, winning it last year, they're not about to give up now.
Yeah, and yet they've got a 3.93 win percentage. I mean, I think you can accept Pittsburgh are out of the running, but pretty much that's it in the National League. Yeah. So yeah, there aren't going to be a lot of sellers. And yet, in terms of a fantasy impact, I think the one that I'm most aware of, and you could tell me if this is wrong, is when I get a closer that I've spent a bit of money on and suddenly gets traded and he's now the setup man. And if you're in a saves league, you're like, no! What a waste of money that was.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's what you'll see. The majority of players moved already and in the next couple of days are going to be relief pitchers. So we've seen Boston sold Brandon Workman, their closer. He's gone to Philadelphia. Matt Barnes, who's now filling the job, he may well go by Monday. Trevor Rosenthal, who we've talked a lot about on this show.
Big Trev.
He may well leave Kansas. If they can get a haul for him and do exactly that, stop being the closer and go and be a setup man somewhere else. Tony Watson at San Francisco, he'll help somebody as well. I think the two most obvious closer targets, if you'd said some a month ago, Keon Keller of the Pirates and Ken Giles at the Blue Jays, both of whom are out of contract at the end of this season. See, both of them are on the injured list, and you may still see them getting traded for a very low price just to get something back and in the hope for the team that buys them that they might be fit by the playoffs.
Okay, and what about SPs then? It doesn't seem to be as much movement, but there is going to be movement, isn't it?
Starting pitching, yeah, always a really hot commodity, because I think this is one area you can really make a shift to your team if you get somebody in and you suddenly lengthen your rotation really strong. We've already seen Taiwan Walker move from Seattle to the Blue Jays. I think I'm just pointing out already he I think will be a sleeper pick for many next year. He's looked okay this year, and I think 1 year on after a significant injury next year might be in a good place. The other one I think you'll definitely see is Kevin Gausman leaving San Francisco. Johnny Cueto may do as well if anybody's prepared to pay the freight on him. He's on a significant contract. And the other really interesting one is in terms of low priced is Robbie Ray of Arizona, who is out of contract at the end of this season. Awful lot of strikeouts, but he seems to have no idea where he's throwing at the moment. So you get almost as many walks.
And there lies one of the old adage when you're talking fantasy baseball, don't take any notice of spring training. Because I went and picked up Robbie Ray on the cheap because he absolutely was lights out in spring training. And now, this season, as you rightly say, can't find the strike zone. He's walking absolutely everybody. He's obviously become a hiker in his spare time because everyone's walking when they're in Robbie Ray's company. And he's been a disaster.
Yes, but he has been a disaster. And yeah, if I'm the Braves, if I'm anywhere else, I wouldn't be after Robbie Ray at all. But two, if I pick two big starting pitcher names that might be on the move that I think will get everybody excited, is Dylan Bundy of the Angels and particularly Lance Lynn of Texas. Both of those guys have pitched well. Lynn has been a borderline ace this year, and both of them still have control next year, so they might get a fairly decent return for the Angels and particularly for Texas if they get moved. And not only that, they could be a very important part of a playoff rotation. So I think those two are big names. And the other one, there's been lots of noise about, you know, the Indians, whether they would move Mike Clevenger or Zach Plesac to get some outfield help. I think Clevenger very unlikely to get moved, but actually Plesac, he's still not being moved back into the rotation. He's come from nowhere to, you know, pitch outstandingly this season. I think there's a chance. I think it's less than 50%, but there's a chance. And the other one, yes, sort of Trevor Bauer, again, if you want a big name, if Cincinnati did collapse. So some big names there, Clevenger, Bauer, et cetera, et cetera.
Are you doing this deliberately, Jimbo? Because you know that Clevenger and Bauer are both of my key parts.
I don't know what you mean. I just picked those. That second place, you know, suddenly those teams, you know.
Well, and of course, you mentioned Zach Plesac as well. And of course, with Clevenger, yeah, both of them had been on the naughty board with that ridiculous decision to go out and party and break COVID protocol, and all credit to Cleveland that they, you know, they gave them both a bit of a smack over the wrist. But I mean, Clevenger, for my money, the most expensive pitcher I picked up this season in the auction draft, hasn't produced at that level. I mean, I think his whip's around 150. That's not ace potential.
He's still a good pitcher. I'll have him off you in a heartbeat, JG. We'll talk about that after the show then.
Yeah, Bellinger? Bellinger for Clevenger? It's got a ring to it. It even rhymes, Jimbo.
Fine. How about some hitters? Hitters.
Okay. Hitters. Yeah, hitters on the move. What sort of difference can that make in a fantasy sense?
I mean, huge, but I don't think you'll see much this year. I mean, I think you talked about some of the teams down the bottom who may be selling, the Angels possibly, but you're talking players like Andrelton Simmons, maybe, but they'll probably give him a qualifying offer. Tommy La Stella, maybe. There's not a lot. The real big one out there, who I'm not convinced he will move, but is JD Martinez. Boston aren't in a good place. He's got, I think it's 1.5 years left on his contract before we can opt out. But in terms of a hitter who could, if he suddenly refines his form, really make a difference to both your fantasy team and your real life team, JD Martinez, but I'd be very surprised.
Okay. Well, let's move on then. Trading strategy in fantasy baseball is the subject that I'd like to talk about now. After trade deadline in fantasy baseball, what are the implications in terms of how you approach your fantasy baseball team?
Okay, so often the trade deadline in fantasy leagues is much later than in actual baseball, but this year it's pretty much around the same time. So many of your leagues will have an early September trade deadline, after which you're only limited to, say, players on the waiver wire, if that, and some leagues don't even allow you that. So it's really about kind of getting yourself in the best possible shape for the run-in. If you're in a National League only or an American League only league, obviously there's excitement. I remember when Manny Machado moved from Baltimore to the Dodgers a couple of years ago at the deadline. That really created a huge furore if you're in a National League only, because that is a league-winning move. But for most of us, this is just about fine-tuning. If you, say, were in second place in one league, we should cover where you are in some of your other leagues as well, shouldn't we, JG?
No, we shouldn't. Let's just focus on what we're talking about.
That's great. Right. But in terms of fantasy, I would say if you take out one thing, the key now is moving away from trying to win a trade to only doing trades that actually help your team.
Okay. So can you give me some specific examples? What does that actually mean?
Right. So during the season, if somebody came up to you and said, look, I'd really love Charlie Blackmon, say, he's starting to hit really well, I'll give you Shane Bieber or I'll give you Gerrit Cole. If this is the beginning of the season, I would have said yes in a heartbeat. Clearly, Bieber and Cole are both much more highly rated players than Charlie Blackmon. He was a great player, but not at that kind of level.
Yeah.
But now you've got to look at your stats. I mean, Shane Bieber's been astonishing. But if you need hitting stats, he's no use to you at all. So I think you have to think much better. So I would say just only do trades that actually make your overall team better, not ones that you win on paper. There's no point getting a whole plethora of outstanding relief pitchers if what you really need is steals and on-base percentage, say.
But do you have a list of rules? I mean, because this is something I've never ever really focused on and talked about or even seen elsewhere on other podcasts or written about just the approach within fantasy baseball to trading. And obviously at this stage of the season, you said it's very specific. What rules can you identify that people should apply?
Maybe we could do a whole off-season podcast, maybe, all about how to trade in fantasy baseball. So, in short, I mean, I think it's very easy. So, start off at number one, identify what positions, stats, or categories that you need. I think often in the rest of the season, you look at other teams, where they're leak, where they're weak, where there's an opportunity for you to extract value or to get better value in a trade. Now it's all about you. You know, if you need a second base, now is the time. If you need runs, if you need home runs, now is the time. What are your stats, your categories that you need? Then I'll be secondly looking at the rest of my league and identifying people who are particularly long in that particular category. Somebody who's got three second basemen, somebody who's already doing really well in home runs and possibly has some to spare. Right. And then thirdly, and I think this is the most crucial for me, get in contact them and ask them what they would want for your ideal players. You know, express an interest, but rather than just bombarding them with 12 different offers, ask them what they are looking for. It may be something you can't do, or it may be something much less than you were expecting to have to offer, or it may be something you hadn't thought of. And I think so much of, I mean, fantasy baseball is meant to be fun. So it's meant to be about a dialogue and identifying, you know, players that each other of you want. And if you offer, just make sure it's something that would actually make the other team better. You know, every league has somebody who's just throwing out outrageous offers time after time after time. So, you know, you're
outrageous as in bad.
Bad and bad and unfair and take advantage, and you know, sometimes it happens, and it's hugely frustrating for the rest of the league seeing somebody being taken advantage or somebody getting unfair help. It's not great. So you know, do make sure that whatever you're offering actually makes the other team better as much as you. And the fifth one I would say, if you want number four, I mean, always reply to. It does my head in sometimes when you do get in contact with people and you get nothing back. It doesn't happen in most of our leagues with friends, but you know, I do play in another number of other ones. Some people are great. Thanks, James. Really appreciate it, but not looking to sell, or no, he's too important to me now, right now, etc. But just always get back to people. And ultimately, you know, we are trying to, this is meant to be fun. It's meant to be enjoyable. Try to find a win-win trade. It leads to healthier leagues long-term, and it means stronger relationships and people are going to be happy to trade with you in the future.
I love this, Jimbo. I love this. It's not just about doing a trade that benefits your team. It's about benefiting mankind. It's about having a great, healthy league where everybody loves each other. That's the world I want to live in.
I'm not sure we'll ever get there, but a healthy league is so much more fun to play in rather than a team of half the league really just taking advantage of the other half of the league.
There's one thing you didn't mention, and I'm interested in your view on it, just very briefly. We've got a good friend who's a legendary freelance sports journalist called Ivan Speck. He knows his baseball and is a great fantasy baseball player. And he often, towards the end of a season, will do a trade, not just based on improving his team, but looking to take advantage of where other teams are against his opponents to knock points off them. He'll trade with somebody who perhaps could catch his opponent in stolen bases. And that's an interesting concept, which you haven't mentioned.
No, I mean, I think that's the PhD level of trading. I think many of us haven't got there. I think it's incredibly well thought through, and if you've got the talent to be able to do that and understand, it's like a game of chess, isn't it? Yeah. Two or three moves ahead. If I was to send that to that person, he could catch that person and knock 2 points of my way. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's outstanding. And I'm sure there are many. One of the things I love about fantasy baseball is some of the brains that get involved with it. And you know, some people just love it for the sport. Other people love it for the strategy. Other people love it for the advanced statistics. And all of those come into play. And that kind of strategizing, it's fantastic. And it's not, I don't do it like that. I don't think that far ahead. But if you've got that kind of a brain, you're able to do that, then yeah, amazing.
And he certainly has. I tip my hat to the only other fantasy legend that I'm lucky enough to call a friend, Mr. Ivan Speck, ladies and gentlemen. Right, we're on to the suitcase. We've so named it, where basically Jimbo goes on holiday, one of these cheap holidays, maybe hitchhiking around the world, and produces out of a rusty old suitcase.
Is that how you see me?
You're like a consistent student. I had visions of you've got one of those rail tickets that we all used to use.
Oh, the Interrail tickets. I did.
Yeah, do you remember those?
I did do that, yeah. Yeah, Yeah, many years ago. Yeah,
we've all done that, mate.
Perennial gap year student.
Absolutely.
I wish. It's happy days. Those were. Yeah.
I know we've been asking our listeners to, if they don't like the description, the suitcase, but I love it. So I'm not even going to bother to ask anymore. Now, the suitcase, basically, for those new listeners, is all about you coming up with players to maybe look at that are sort of not particularly rostered in most leagues in all the different positions. Lots of home runs, literally, in last week's suitcase, Jimbo. You did it again for us. Can you do it this week?
It's getting harder, obviously, as the season goes on. I have to pick players who are rostered in less than 20% of ESPN leagues. So each time we get one right, their ownership zooms up. I say, you know, an awful lot of other people are pitching, are suggesting these players. It's not just down to us, but it is quite reassuring to see we've got at least some right. So that's good. So catcher, I want to say, take a chance on Cisco. So Chance Cisco. Do you see what I did there?
Yeah, JG? I did, mate.
Yeah, so I'll leave you to do the humour. That's probably for the best, isn't it?
Lesson number one.
Yeah. So, yeah, Chance Cisco, Baltimore catcher, hitting well, only if Pedro Severino is injured. He's been out 4 or 5 days. Yeah. If they put him on the IL, obviously Baltimore's a good place to hit. Chance Cisco was a once highly regarded prospect, has been hitting well. If he's the everyday catcher in Baltimore, I would be looking at that. And the other guy, Jorge Alfaro of Miami, back from COVID, only 17% owned. Miami's not a wonderful place to hit, but he is a decent, you know, he is a decent batsman. He has power. And you know, I actually have him in a deep dynasty league, and I am hoping that one year he will live up to his potential.
Okay, first, third, centre, infield. I've been looking for that very pickup, and I've got two names to throw to you. I've looked at Brandon Belt, who we know has got a couple of games coming up in Coors, which you've highlighted before on previous shows. Justin Smoke, who unbelievably is batting cleanup for the Brewers, and yet sits on the waiver wire.
He does. I mean, we talked about Smoke, as you know. That's one of the many that I've got very wrong this year. I talked about Smoke in a fantastic lineup, in a fantastic park, but he just hasn't hit until the last 2 weeks when he has started hitting, and he started hitting home runs. So he's sitting there 10% owned. If you've got space in the corner infield, absolutely somebody I'd look at. Belt, yeah, I mean, he doesn't play every game, doesn't always play against lefties, but at the moment he's been hot, hot, hot for the last week, and he's in Coors for 2 days next week. But if I want to focus your one person, I think is interesting. You know, I like a bit of rookie nookie. A young player's come up. So that's
good. No, that did make me laugh.
I was about to say that's terrible, actually. That's but all of somebody who's good, Ryan Mountcastle of Baltimore. He doesn't walk a lot. He is a well-regarded youth player. He's been waiting to come up for quite a long time. But again, Baltimore is a good place to hit. He's hitting sixth in the lineup. He's only 10% owned. If you've got space, pick him up. See how he gets on. He is hitting at the moment. That might get better. So that's somebody. But it's getting harder and harder at corner infield.
Jimbo, I love rookie nookie, particularly when the player reference is called Ryan Mountcastle. Well, you didn't even pick up on that one. Anyway, let's move on. Second base, shortstop, middle infielder. Thinner and thinner. Second base. I remember the days when that was so easy to fill. Nowadays, it's virtually impossible.
It is particularly, I say last week, we actually did really well. So Willy Adames, we talked about Tampa Bay. Yeah. He's had a superb week. Jake Cronenworth, we talked about as a fantastic Swiss Army knife middle infielder, is zoomed up. He's now owned in 65% of leagues.
And we talked about people are listening, mate. People are listening. They've got
to. Do you think that's what it is?
Yeah, it's on the street.
This podcast is driving the entire world. maybe. And John Bertie, 3 stone bases. But disappointingly, Nico Goodrum, who we keep mentioning, leading off for Detroit, sometimes playing other places in the lineup, sometimes still only 17% rostered. So we need to get him up and above the 20%.
Yeah, and he's got some production. I think he had a home run, some stolen bases last week.
Since we suggested last week, exactly 3 stolen bases, 1 home run, he could help you still.
But if you're still focusing on the middle infield, the word Garcia might be one you want to consider.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting guys. So going to deeper leagues, they're probably not on a 10 or 12 team, but if you're on a 15 teamer and you're really going, oh God, I've got, I don't know what to do. Two interesting names. I think Jose Garcia, who was called up by the Reds yesterday, actually a terrible fielder apparently, but actually really, I think, underrated hitter. It's a brilliant place to hit, obviously, in Cincinnati. He's got power, he's got speed. He played yesterday, he got a stolen base. That's one I'd be interested in. And the other guy, Luis Garcia, I can't believe they're related. Washington, a more highly regarded rookie, probably less power, less speed, but he is playing every day and he's getting on base and he's getting runs and he's getting the odd run batted in. So a deep league play, but both of the Garcias certainly interesting if they play every day.
Okay, what about the outfield? Should we be looking causeway?
Yes. Definitely causeway. So yes, the two players, I think definitely if you've got space for anybody on your utility or on your bench, two players you must look at. The Rockies are heading to cause. They're playing the next 6 days. They've got six home games all coming up and two outfielders there. Raimel Tapia, he is leading off for the Rockies every day and he's only rostered in 7% of leagues. And the second guy, Sam Hilliard, he's had home runs. He's had stolen bases this week. He's going off. He's only rostered in 5% of leagues. I mean, that is just bonkers to me.
Bonkers. I'm glad you used that word because that's a bit like Rockies manager Bud Black, who clearly doesn't like to play his youngsters. I'm assuming that's what you're referring to.
I mean, it's a nightmare. Colorado, it's an amazing place to hit. We've had Garrett Hampson who's come in. He's gone at the top of the lineup. He's been hitting and now he's out the lineup. We've had poor old Brendan Rodgers who's been, you know, this fantastic youth player who's been threatened to come up for years and has never made it.
But you know, I ask myself the question, do these baseball managers not consider us fancy baseball managers? Should there not be a quorum that perhaps we all get together and have a discussion? Because there are times when they make decisions that make our lives impossible.
I couldn't agree more. I'm astounded that...
That's not a consideration. It should be, absolutely. Right, let's move on to pitching. We're running out of time.
And
I'd just shake my head. Go on, name them.
Starting pitchers, really, really difficult. So one, Danny Duffy somehow is less than 20% rostered. He's got a tricky game away at Chicago White Sox this weekend, but he has got good numbers this season. He should be rostered in a 12-teamer. And the other one, our mate who we talked about last week, Chad Kuhl. He's still, of the Pirates, still only rostered in 10% of leagues.
Not in ours. Unfortunately, I can't get my head around this one though, because I've been looking at Chad Kuhl in terms of his career numbers, because they often talk about players coming back to the norm. I mean, his ERA this season is off the charts compared to his career numbers. Where's this come from?
I think he's always been a decent pitcher. I mean, Pittsburgh's a good place to pitch. Look, he is not going to be a top 20 or top 30 pitcher anytime soon. But actually, since we mentioned him last week, this week, he's had two decent pitching matchups. He's pitched 11 innings. He's only let in two runs and he's got a win since we recommended him. I'd be looking at his matchups. I wouldn't be playing him anywhere difficult. He's possibly pitching slightly above his head, but at 10% rostered, if you needed somebody, that at least is somebody I'd be looking at.
Go on.
No, I was only just going to do a couple of relief pitches very quickly. We always like to look at, you know, potential saves candidates. There seem to be lots just coming up constantly. So first of all, Diego Castillo appears to be the Tampa Bay closer for now. He's only 12% rostered, which seems pretty low for somebody who normally has decent numbers, although Tampa Bay seems to have a complete revolving door. They've had, I think, literally like 9 or 10 different players have got a save for Tampa this year, which is bonkers. And again, for fantasy managers, a nightmare. And the other guy, Scott Barlow of Kansas City. I think he'll be the Royals closer next week, assuming that our very good friend of the show, Trevor Rosenthal, is traded over the weekend.
Talking of Trevor, we always finish with a Hail Mary. Have you possibly found one this week?
It's so difficult. But yeah, yes, we had some feedback. Apparently, I'm cheating by always going for a relief pitcher. So I will try not to go. So yeah, this week's Hail Mary, owned in less than 1% of leagues. So we are going with Jake Cave of Minnesota, owned in a whopping 0.5% of leagues. But with Byron Buxton out of the lineup, Max Kepler is hobbling. I think it's very likely that Jake Cave might get regular at-bats in the Minnesota lineup. We know it's one of the top offenses in the American League. There might well be some stats to be had there for the next week or two. Jake Cave, Minnesota.
Jimbo, our longest show to date of five, but well worth it. Some absolute gems of information, and as always, a joy to speak with you. Thank you so much for your time, mate.
My pleasure, as always. And I'm almost hoping, you know, we have a different league position to discuss next week. But
let's not put the curse on it. Jimbo, many thanks. That's it from episode 5 of the Fantasy Baseball Add-On on the Johnny and Josh Show. Thank you for listening in. We look forward to having your company next week. In the meantime, may your fantasy baseball team prove as successful as James's. Thank you and good night.